Today on Maine Calling, Black History in Maine. Uncovering Maine's Black history is challenging work, but over the past few decades, a handful of researchers have learned a great deal about the Black people who have lived in Maine, some as early as the 1600s. One of the leaders of that research has been Bowdoin Emeritus Associate Professor Randy Stakeman. Stakeman started and ran the Africana Studies Department at Bowdoin and is a leading scholar on African colonialism and African Americans in Maine. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, Randy Stakeman is our guest to give us an overview of a part of Maine history that is often overlooked. From Maine's involvement in the slave trade to its role in the Underground Railroad and the Black families who have called Maine home for generations. Maine Calling is just ahead.
Maine Calling is made possible in part by support from Maine Farmland Trust, working with farmers to grow the future of farming and food in Maine. Learn more at mainefarmlandtrust.org/learn. Maine Health, where care teams provide expert coordinated care focused on your overall wellness to help you be your healthiest self. MaineHealth.org. And by Maine Seacoast Mission, delivering health care, education, and support to islands and coastal Downeast communities. Learn more at seacoastmission.org.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Maine is known as one of the whitest states in the nation, but there have always been Black Mainers living and working and raising families here. Today, we're going to learn the history of Black Americans in Maine, as well as how that history fits into the Black experience nationwide. Joining me, Randolph Stakeman, Emeritus Associate Professor with Bowdoin College. He helped found Bowdoin's Africana Studies Program and is a leading scholar on African colonialism and of Maine's Black history. He participated in a recent documentary called Forgotten Hero, Walter White and the NAACP that will air as part of the American Experience series on Maine Public Television, February 25th. We'll discuss some of that history as well today. We invite you to join the conversation. What do you know about the achievements of Black Americans in Maine? What questions do you have? We already have one question from a student looking forward to more. Send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Professor Stakeman, thank you so much for joining us today. I understand that you came to Maine in 1978, to Bowdoin in 1978. Was Maine what you expected it to be? What was that like?
You know, I didn't have specific expectations of Maine. But my wife and I, by the 1980s, events would happen and we would look at each other and say, are we the first Black people ever to live in Maine? And after we said that a few times, I figured out I'm a historian. I should be able to answer that question.
And when you say events would happen, people would say things, or and you would just think, do you all know anything? What year are you living in?
Well, you know, wherever we went, like if we went in to buy a washing machine, We'd get this long story about how the person wasn't racist, and he had done some favor for some Black person at some point in the past, and you know we looked at each other and said, you know, like, well, actually, how much is the washing machine? Like, you know, we didn't want the story; we just wanted the washing machine. So things like that, you know, there wasn't much, name calling or actually unpleasant things. I mean, occasionally my wife would, when she would go into the grocery store or she'd walk down the street, she'd get, cat calls and stuff, but there wasn't any real, anger. And I think part of that is simply that Brunswick was right next to the Naval Air Station. And so there were black people from the Naval Air Station. And, merchants were not about to insult black people and get on the Naval Air Station's bad list, because that would have been bad for business.
Well, you talk about how you said to yourself, I'm a historian, I can figure this out. I understand that you built an archive over those 28 years you were at Bowdoin. How did you find the information? Where did you go?
I went up to the Maine State Archives, and I went through the manuscript census. Like, when a census taker would go into an area, they would write down on a piece of paper on these forms, they would write down the information that they discovered. And that's the manuscript census. And so I went up to Augusta to the Maine Archive. And went through the manuscript census all the way from when it first was published or first edition in 1790 all the way up to 1900. And I would write down the names of anybody identified as black or mulatto or what have you. And that took months
I can
to
only imagine.
and now you could do the same research right in the comfort of your home through ancestry.com, right, which has digitized all of the manuscript censuses from all of the states.
Wow. And you're also, excuse me, excuse me, you're also having to read that handwriting that's I find very hard to read
That's
sometimes.
correct. That's correct. And sometimes that was really hard.
Oh, well, what you found though, of course, is that there had been black people living in Maine all that time, especially in the cities, Portland and Bangor. Let's just start with that period because that's what you started your research on, 1790 to 1900. What's
Well,
the
actually,
story? Go ahead.
no, that was all in. I got from the census,
I see.
but Maine is a hotbed of local history. So, like every town, not every town, but most of the towns in Maine have some local history published, like Kittery or And so I traced back the and they had some mention, usually. An aside or a humor story about the black people who were sometimes slaves as early as let me say the 1600s. So there were black people here in Maine in the 1600s.
I think a lot of people are surprised to hear that there were people who were enslaved in Maine. A lot of people think of Maine as a center of the abolitionist movement. They know about maybe a little bit about the fact that Maine is, of course, part of the Underground Railroad, but surprised to find out that people in Maine held slaves. How long did that ha How many were there, and how long did that happen?
Well, it happened until, well, Maine was part of Massachusetts, right? And so Maine slavery was short-lived. It was about 120 years. And it was confined to a small, well-to-do population. And it produced a slave population which never exceeded 500 or 600, right?
And it was who were the people who, we didn't have plantations like the South. Who were the people in Maine who enslaved people, who owned other human beings?
Most of the of slaves in Maine were domestic servants. And it was about people who were involved in the trades that brought them into contact with aristocratic Southerners. And they tried to emulate that lifestyle by having domestic servants, right? So you find places like Kittery, places with a maritime trade. Those were the people who had slaves. York, wills and deeds show that slave ownership was common among the leaders of Kittery and York by the end of the 1600s. At least three of the justices of the general court all owned slaves.
Tell us about Maine's part of the Underground Railroad. What were the years that the Underground Railroad was active? I understand the Abyssinian Church, of course, that's being restored right now in Portland was part of it, but there were other 75 other places. Go ahead.
Before you yeah, get yeah. there, no, now, in I what was the date? I think it was about it was in the 1700s, and slavery was outlawed by Massachusetts, and since Maine was part of Massachusetts, it meant that all the slaves in Maine were therefore freed by the court. Now, of course, slaves in Maine didn't know this, right? Until a slave named Sarah, who lived up in Warren, hired a lawyer, and the lawyer, indeed, she had heard rumors about this emancipation, and so she hired a lawyer to see if that was true, and it was, and so she gained her freedom.
Wow, and I just looked up the year really quickly, 1783. So in 1783, Massachusetts outlaws slavery, but people who are enslaved in Maine are not told about this, and just that's so interesting. How did you find out about Sarah hiring a lawyer?
Well, it's like I said, a lot of towns have their own, little town histories. And the town of Warren has a good one. And it was in there.
When these people were freed, did they stay in Maine or did they go somewhere else?
Most of them stayed in Maine. They became, in effect, wage labor. Like they stayed if they were domestic servants, but now their former owners had to pay them, right? And but the major thing was they were free to move around, all right? So there's a movement. People not necessarily leaving Maine, but moving 20 miles, right, was a really big thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. I know that there are a couple families in Maine that Black families in Maine that have lived here for multiple generations, 7 or 8 generations. Are these families descended from those people?
Some of them are. I mean, Maine has also seen waves of Black immigration. Wave is kind of overstating the case, but that Black
people. We're not
people,
Chicago or Detroit.
Yeah, exactly. A wave could be like 20 people. Yeah, the numbers are certainly small. Once there was no slavery in Maine, it became a more attractive place, so that you started to get Portland started to attract a Maine population, a Black population, and that Black population in cities like Portland were very important, because that was the only place there were enough Black people to have the institutions that normally go along with building a community, like the Abyssinian Church, was both a meeting place. It was a school for a time. But it's those kinds of institutions that were rare in Maine, but were present in Portland.
All right, so I'm going to go back to my question because you mentioned the Abyssinian Church about the Underground Railroad. I read just recently in preparation for this show 75 sites in Maine believed to be part of the Underground Railroad. How did that work?
Well, see,
You're skeptical.
yes, indeed. I mean, the Underground Railroad was, first of all, underground, right? They did not advertise in the general public where sites were, where this site was, and that
Challenging
site.
to research this many years later.
Exactly. And a lot of places have claimed to be Underground Railroad sites that were really, during Prohibition, sites to smuggle alcohol. So I would be skeptical about that claim. And when I was at Bowdoin, my office was in the building, the African American Center, which was had an attic and had originally been a faculty house. And a faculty member who was very much an abolitionist. And so the rumor was that it was an Underground Railroad site, but that could never be proved.
Well, we are speaking with Professor Randy Stakeman about Black history in Maine. He is an expert on that. I also want to ask you about the documentary you participated in. And we have so many more questions. I mean, we're still only into the 1800s, but we do have to take a break. Do you have a question for the professor? Our phone number 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Today, we're learning about the people and the events that are part of the history of Black Americans in Maine. With me, Emeritus Bowdoin scholar Randy Stakeman, who taught African studies. He's an expert in Maine's Black history and is part of a documentary that's coming up called Forgotten Hero, Walter White and the NAACP. Maine Public Television will air this film as part of the American Experience series. It first airs on February 25th, and you'll also be able to find it, of course, on Passport and the Maine Public app. Share your comments and questions. What do you know or not know? What have you always wondered about Maine's Black history? Our email address, talk@mainepublic.org. Comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Professor Stakeman, were you able to tell, was there a time, a certain point in Maine's history when the Black population was at its highest? And if so, is there a reason for that? And is there a time when people left?
Well, it's at its highest now. And that's mainly because of the influx of immigration, like from the Sudan. The Catholic Church has resettled some Black immigrants, both in Portland and in Lewiston. In fact, now, Maine has more Black people than Vermont. It's not at the bottom of the list of New England states anymore. We're not talking a lot, but still, it's bigger.
Yeah, I'm going to go to I'm trying to find it now. A question that came in, and I love that this is from a student. Well, you know what? I'm going to have to come back to that. Let's see. We're going to go to Sandy, who's calling from Saco. Hi, Sandy. Go ahead.
Oh, hi. Thank you for this show. I live in Saco, right near Beach Street, which turns into Ferry Road. And there's an antique house there that the former owners used to allow people to come and visit on certain occasions. They would have a sign up, you could walk around in this old house. Well, when I was there, they told me that it had been a place where the railroad used to come. There was a tunnel from the river, the Saco River, underground, and it would lead up to that house. and that they had, harbored people from slave people. So I don't know if that's true, but it was just so fascinating to me.
Yeah.
Hello?
Randy, have you heard of Professor Stakeman? Have you heard about this house in Saco? And do you know if there's truth to the story?
I have not, and I do not. But I'm not saying that it isn't true. It could be true. Remember, what the Underground Railroad was a way to get people, escaped slaves, into Canada. And so people would come into Maine, either on boats, they got boats, or overland, moving from one site to another. And then they would eventually move through Maine and up to Canada. So it's quite possible, but I can't confirm it.
All right. Well, Sandy, thank you for that. And Professor Stakeman, do we have any idea how many people moved through Maine to Canada? Or is it that, again, something that is kind of unknowable?
That's unknowable.
Yeah. Here's an email. This is what I was looking for before, from Maribel. Hi, I live in Brunswick. I'm in the fifth grade and I'm a homeschooler. I'm wondering how many Black people lived here in the 1930s and what was their life like? What types of segregation were here in the Jim Crow period?
Brunswick was actually one of the major sites of Blacks. In fact, if there is a Black cemetery that was on the land that was owned by a prominent Black farmer in Brunswick, where it was in disrepair last time I saw it, right? But it was hidden back in the woods. Now, I wouldn't know offhand what the Black population of Brunswick was in 1930, but it was probably not a lot by the 1930s. But you can go to the census for 1930, and there, if you dig down deep enough, there will be some listing for Brunswick, and it should tell you the population by race in Brunswick at that time.
Mm. And just about the question about the Jim Crow period, yes, broadly, did Maine have the same kind of segregationist policies that you saw in states further south? Were there places Black people were not allowed to go?
Not after the Civil War. I mean, I think in Maine, yes, let's divide it into two things, and that's whether or not there were attitudes and whether or not there were laws, all right? I think there were attitudes towards Blacks, seeing Blacks as inferior and not being able, to do certain things or hold certain jobs and stuff like that. But there were not laws, segregation laws that said Blacks couldn't go into a given area or a given building or stuff like that.
Yeah, and Maine infamously had a surge of Ku Klux Klan activity. I understand that it was not just Black people who were targeted, but also people who are Catholic, French Canadians and Irish immigrants. And I'm wondering what you can tell us about that. Were there people who were killed during that period?
I don't know enough to know if there were people who were killed by the Klan and stuff like that. I think for the Klan, the major, and you find Klan activity, its height is in the 1920s. And you find, Klan marches and Klan meetings and stuff like that.
And Maine clearly was not a welcoming place in many places. I mean, the story of Malaga Island is the example of the turn of the last century, what kind of attitudes we had.
Right. Malaga Island is a dark piece of Maine history. There was a settlement, and it was an interracial settlement on Malaga Island, and people were mostly it's in the river, and people were mostly engaged in the maritime trades. And there were several black people, but there were also white people who had married into or with black people. And I don't have the exact date, maybe you do, but in the early 1900s, the governor declared it a place that needed to be cleared out. And some of the black people were sent to
the Pineland School for the Feeble-Minded,
right.
It was called. Yeah.
That's I'm trying to think of the full name of it. And a lot of the people who lived in Malaga are buried in the Pineland School. But there are also people who moved other places. And there're still descendants of those people who live in Maine. If your name is Darling, for example, there might be a chance that you were descended from the people who were on Malaga Island.
Fascinating. We have a question from a caller who dropped about Maine's role in slavery and the shipbuilding trade. I know that we have done a Maine calling on this, but not for a few years, that a researcher named Kate McMahon has really uncovered a lot of information about this. What would you like to share with our audience about the role of Maine's maritime industry, especially in the 1800s, and the slave trade?
Yeah, in fact, the U.S. banned the slave trade. And the last person ever to be prosecuted for engaging in the slave trade was a Maine captain, right, who was still running slaves. I forget when it was, 1820 or so, when the U.S. banned slavery.
So it was doing it illegally. Was illegally,
yes.
Still, yeah. So
most things illegal. They're only illegal if they catch you.
I have an email here from Barb, and we have in parentheses Des Maris. First of all, Dr. Stakeman was very helpful and kind to me when I was researching African American families in my area. I will always be grateful for his encouragement. I'd love for Dr. Stakeman to talk about the fact that African Americans were the true conductors of the Underground Railroad. Yes, whites also aided in the efforts, but because history was written by the white perspective, I feel the African Americans themselves were ignored.
Well, that's 100% true. And, she's welcome for any little help I was able to do to give her. Portland had more places that were legitimately in the Underground Railroad, because people would get to Portland and then get to the black community of Portland, and they would help move those people on. So the role of African Americans was very important in the Underground Railroad.
An email here from Jean. How can we have black history taught in all Maine schools? I believe that over 20 years ago, a law was passed to ensure this would happen. Unfortunately, funding may or may not have been provided for teachers to be educated and able to educate their students. What can we do to ensure that our citizens are well educated in Black history?
Well, you can always, lobby your political representatives you know, whether they're in the state house and all. Yeah, it's funny. It's I have done lobbying in the state house, and I got to understand lobbying means that you stood in the lobby of the place and just got, you know, politicians as they passed. So I would think that to get anything done that's run by a state, you have to convince the state representatives to do that.
Dr. Stakeman, can you tell us about one or two people who you have discovered did really remarkable things? Black historical figures in Maine?
I think, well, first of all, I think is just being a black person in Maine and you know, is remarkable. But there are people like Ruben Ruby, who was from a Portland community, and he worked as a hack driver. You know, he drove rigs, like, you know, he was what we would think of as taxis today and all like that. And he was one of the leaders of the black community. And he eventually went to California in the gold rush, or and you know, and then I think he falls off my map as to what he's done. I'd also like to mention Jerry Talbot. Jerry Talbot was, I think, the first black person ever elected to the state house. And he was a leader in the NAACP, in the formation of the NAACP in Portland. And, you know, he's from Bangor, and, you know, he has just, he's a remarkable man.
Yeah, we have. I have notes here about two Tuskegee Airmen, the famous Tuskegee Airmen, who are from Maine, Frederick Williams and Eugene Jackson. Yeah, and Fred Williams went on to become a select person in Windham. So wonderful, an attorney and longtime Maine resident. You mentioned the NAACP, Dr. Stakeman. This is the film that you are participating in. Or have participated in, been interviewed for American Experience is about the formation in the early years of the NAACP. Tell me about your experience with this project.
You know, I began researching the NAACP probably in the 1990s, and continued in 2000. What I was interested in was really the effect, or the attempts of the NAACP to affect foreign policy, because I thought that was fertile ground that hadn't been trod. Like, people had done a lot about the you know, NAACP's domestic program, right? But as part of that, I discovered Walter White, and his story was so remarkable, and so I started collecting both visual and audio clips. And I'm sorry if this is getting long-winded,
It's
but
not.
there was a program at USC, University of Southern California. My son went to University of Southern California, and that's how I knew about it. But they were trying to replace, have scholars not write books about things, but to have, I guess you would call it, websites about things. And so they needed audio and visual kinds of things for a website. It's a project called Scalar. Now, it has not replaced the book for scholars, But there have been, a goodly number of people, like dozens of people, who have taken advantage of it. Anyway, so I created a scalar site on Walter White and his times, and that eventually brought me to the attention of the main public broadcast, not the main, but the public broadcasting system, who were interested in doing a project on White. And so they used some of the materials, and I guided them as to where there were other materials. And they interviewed me on camera as, I was one of the talking heads that in the documentary.
Well, I'm really looking forward to seeing it. We are, of course, speaking with Professor Randy Stakeman about Black history in Maine. We're taking another quick break. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Our topic today, Black history in Maine. Joining me, a scholar of Black history and Africana studies who was a longtime professor at Bowdoin College, Randy Stakeman. He helped found Bowdoin College's African Studies program. Join our conversation, 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org or post to our Facebook page or to Instagram. Calling in now is Bob Green, who is also studying Maine's Black history. He's a retired journalist and an eighth-generation Mainer. Thanks for joining us, Bob.
Thank you very much for
What do you know about your family? How was it that your family came to Maine 8 generations ago?
I wish I could find out. I only know that I am descended from a couple that were married in New Gloucester in 1783. According to the records, the man, Boston Ruby, as he eventually was known, was born in 1750. One record says that he was born in Massachusetts. The other says he was born in Maine. And of course, both could be correct. The Gray Historical Society says that he came from Africa, but they don't know where they got that information from. And I've never been able to find out. And he just shows up and gets married.
Wow, that's really remarkable. Dr. Stakeman, what would you like to say or ask Bob Green?
Well, first I say hi, Bob.
Hi, Randy.
And welcome to the historian's nightmare. That is the rumors, things written down, and all like that. It may or may not be true. So, you as well as anybody else knows that that's the case. But that's what history is.
Super interesting too, because New Gloucester is not a coastal town and not a place where there's, sea captains and things like that. So that's another sort of layer of the mystery, right?
Oh yeah,
That's part of it.
I didn't want to imply that Americans did in Maine were in the maritime trades. I mean, maritime trades were very important, and maybe 40% of the black population of Portland was engaged in it. But there have been black Mainers who were engaged in agriculture, for a long, long time. And I wouldn't be surprised if some of Bob's early ancestors were involved in agriculture.
Now, Bob, even though this great ancestor of 8 generations, the root is in New Gloucester, I understand most of your family, most of the generations were spent in Portland and were really a strong part of an actual Black community in Portland, especially around Montjoy Hill. Tell me what you know about that.
Well, the house that I grew up in on Lafayette Street on Montjoy Hill was actually purchased in 1897 by Francis Eben Houston. He purchased it when he married that would be my great grandmother. And almost exactly 1 year later, he was aboard the steamer Portland when it went down.
Oh.
And so I found records where his siblings and things gave their interest to my great-grandmother so that she would have the house. And then, of course, when she died, she gave it to her daughter, who was my grandmother. And that's who I lived with when I was growing up. My mother and I lived there.
Wow. What a history. I understand that you do teach classes about the history of Black Americans in Maine. What do you find surprises people, and what do you really want to impart that, you know, people maybe don't quite get?
Well, what they don't get is we call ourselves invisible because we've been here forever. We've been here, well, forever might be the wrong word, but we've been here as long as Europeans have. The first person from African descent that we know landed, or we know by name who was in what is now Maine, was Matuta Costa, who was here in 1608. Now, that's 12 years before the Pilgrims arrived. But, you know, we teach, unfortunately, we only teach British history in this country. And so we teach about Jamestown, and we teach about Plymouth Rock, and we don't really talk about the Popham colony, who was here early. We don't talk about the French explorers who Da Costa was with. We don't talk about the Spanish explorers that much down in Florida, where the oldest city in the United States is St. Augustine. We don't mention that. We talk about Jamestown and maybe the Roanoke colony. So, but Black folks have been here forever, as long as the Europeans have been here. It's and I think most people, that's what they don't realize.
Well, Bob, it's a pleasure to hear your voice. Thank you so much for calling in today. Bob Green, a retired journalist and an expert in Maine's Black history. We have a call coming in from Amy calling from Waterboro. Hi, Amy. Go ahead.
Hi. So my family has lived here for a long time, since the 18th century. But myself, I'm from California, and I moved back to Maine about 3.5 years ago. And I was a little surprised at how white it was. Well, it still is. And I was wondering why that was and how it was related to the history of Maine. I mean, frankly, there's little pockets of diversity now, you know, in Portland and Biddeford. But, you know, it still is the whitest state in the country. And I love the fact that a lot of people who have lived here, my family included, are very proud of the fact that, you know, we were the first part of the country to outlaw slavery. But there's still not very many people that, you know, are not white or of a European
background.
Amy,
yeah, it's a very good question, especially because of the proud history of abolitionism in this area. And Dr. Stakeman, it's a great question to ask because is it because there was never a lot of industry in Maine? It wasn't as though the car industry grew up here like it did in Detroit. Or is it more nuanced than that?
I would say there were several factors. First of all, I want to point out, again, there are more Black people in Maine than there are in Vermont, right? So now, if you did it percentage-wise, it's a lot different. But anyway, there, you know, most people, even today, live within 100 miles of where they were born, right? And so, you know, the scarcity of Black people in Maine is a self-fulfilling prophecy, right? That, you know, because there are not a lot of Black people in Maine, there will never be a lot of Black people in Maine. And I think, you know, this has to do with weather, the economy, and history. You know, there just haven't been a lot of people who made it up that far north.
Did people come as far as Boston and then stop?
Well, you know, I think Boston is different because, you know, it not only was a port, but it was also a metropolis, you know, for Massachusetts. And so there were a lot of economic opportunities there, and that there weren't in Maine. And I would think that's a very important point to try to explain the lack of African Americans who went all the way to Maine.
Yeah, Maine was has been for much of its history a relatively poor state, and so there wasn't a place to go for economic opportunity.
Right.
And in fact, after the Civil War, a lot of people who fought in the Civil War for Maine moved and moved to the Midwest because they thought there was more opportunity there. A lot of
Right.
white people, yeah. So, Amy, thanks for the question. It's a really good one. And our former colleague Willis Ryder Arnold was curious about the same question. He did a whole reporting piece called Why is Maine So White? So if you Google Willis Arnold and Why is Maine So White, you can come up with that. Let's see, I have an email here from Bruce. I've met Randy a time or two. My wife is Dodie in the dean's office at Bowdoin. We raised our kids in Brunswick, and I agree that it was great to have a diverse population when the base was active. Our kids grew up with black friends as well as kids with heritage from foreign parents who married service members. Our kids could take Japanese classes in elementary school taught by a Navy wife. I am a land surveyor and have seen deeds with restrictions about selling land and certain developments to black people. That was shocking the first time I saw it, having grown up in Massachusetts among black people. It's sad to see even still. So, have you encountered that as well, Dr. Stakeman, where there were land deeds that said that in recent history, no selling to black people?
I haven't seen them in Maine. I've seen them in other places. After I retired, we moved out to Albuquerque, New Mexico, and that was full of D. I started to do, you know, as I always do. I started to do some research in the black population of Albuquerque, and found that there were a lot of these deeds. So it does not surprise me that happened in Maine. I would also, you know, mention that there was a Supreme Court case in the 1940s that declared those kinds of deeds, null and void. You could not have deeds that excluded a population. And you know, it wasn't just African Americans. It was Asians as well, and in areas in which there were a lot of Hispanic people, it sometimes included Hispanic people.
Boy, so many great questions coming in with just 2 minutes left. An email here from Elizabeth. Interested in hearing about Maine residents who identified as white but were African Americans. Long after my grandmother died, we found her birth certificate that was labeled C, and then her mother's labeled B.
Yep, passing for white. It's a long tradition in black communities, not just in Maine, but throughout the country.
Beth on Facebook, boy, I'm short on time, but this is interesting. She stewards the Paris Hill House on Paris Hill, which was the home of Pedro Tavukan Paris, a formerly enslaved person who's been written about quite a bit. She said that the ship that carried him from East Africa to Rio, where the ship and captain were caught by authorities there, was a Maine ship. So this is an example of Mainers being complicit in this trade. Additionally, he was, and she used quotes here, adopted by the Paris family. There is evidence he was not treated fully as an equal. I get historians knocking on my door out of the blue sometimes, and I always welcome them in. Tavukan is buried in the Knoll Cemetery behind our home.
Wow, great story.
Yeah, have you seen this? Do you know about the Tavukan? I think it's Pedro Tavukan. Yeah, so this is an example of how the slave trade really, and this is one thing I remember Kate McMahon saying that it was challenging to find these stories because people in the small historical societies didn't really want to find out that, you know, somebody in the beautiful captain's home in their town was involved in it. And Barbara on Facebook writes, students might be interested in the book Maine's Visible History, The First Chronicle of Its People. by H.H. Price and Gerald Talbot, with contributions by Bob Green and others. It's in most town libraries as well as many school libraries.
Yep. In fact, you'll find a blurb by me on the back of the yes. You know, that comes about because I started to write, I proposed writing a book called The Invisible Mainers. And so Harriet said she wrote her book in response to my phrase, The Invisible Mainers.
Well, it's been such a pleasure having you on the program today. Randy Stakeman, Emeritus Bowdoin Scholar of Africana Studies, and one of the featured experts in the film Forgotten Scholar, Walter White and the NAACP. You can view that on Maine's public television. Its first airing is February 25th. Today's sound engineer was Jane Donahue. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the show, Maine Secretary of State Shanna Bellows will be our guest. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.